welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
This is Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. And we have an awesome guest today. Please introduce yourself.
Hello. So my name is Rachel Harrison. I'm the author of The Return and Cackle.
And Cackle is the book we're going to be talking about today. The Return was by far one of my favorite books of last year. I don't think I've ever read a book about a friend breakup that was just like expressed the emotions behind it in such a beautiful way and also managed to be horrifying at the same time. But Cackle is a little bit of a different beast. It is definitely horror and it has some moments that really are truly terrifying and gut-wrenching, but it's different. It's a story about witches, and witches are having a moment, as they like to say. But this comes at it at a different angle. So would you like to just talk a little bit about the plot of your book?
Sure. So Cackle is a wry contemporary witch book. It's about Annie Crane, who is reeling from a recent breakup. So she's fresh out of a long-term relationship, feeling lost, feeling sorry for herself. And she's starting over in a new town upstate. So new job, new apartment, and she's trying to be optimistic about it, but she's really struggling until she meets Sophie, who is a beautiful, mysterious woman who befriends Annie and kind of takes Annie under her wing. And Annie's thrilled. She just made a fabulous new friend, but everyone else in town kind of acts strange around Sophie. And Sophie lives in this like huge Gilded Age mansion in the woods and is vague about her own past. And so Annie isn't entirely sure if she should trust Sophie, and things kind of unravel from there. Sprinkle in some spiders, and yeah, that's Cackle.
The book is so good, and I love just everything about it. I'm a huge fan of upstate New York myself. I think you went there last time though in The Return, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So The Return takes place mostly in like the Catskills, and this I kept purposely vague because it's I wanted it to have a real fairy tale vibe where it's like you can't. It's just somewhere, and because I lived in Brooklyn for so long. Upstate, if you live in the city, upstate is just anywhere that's like not in New
York. That's
city.
True. I mean, when you talk to people, they're like either like, oh, you live in New York, oh, by the city, and it's like, yeah, no, New York is actually a freaking huge place, right?
Yeah, I'm in Western New York right now. So
right, nice, yeah.
And that's like really out of the, and people like, I remember because my husband grew up here, and I remember when he told me he's from Western New York, I'm from New Jersey. I like, it sounded, he could have told me he was from Mars. I was like, cool, but I had no idea. It's just such a big state. And so it kind of gave me room to be like, it's wherever my imagination wants it to be.
Yeah, no. So the town of Rowan has, it's so beautiful, and I could picture it very much. And I loved Sophie. You know, there's what I like is that there's just a lot of whispers about her behind her back, and you're learning about her from two different ways. You're learning about her through your main character, and you're learning about her through gossip. So this is, as opposed to your last story, which was a friend breakup story, this is like a traditional breakup story, but also a friend story. Where did it all come from for you?
So this book had a lot of different inspirations and influences. And I think really, it was kind of a perfect storm. I saw Midsommar, and I looked, that movie was, when I see something or read something that really like sparks something creatively in me, that like it's like, oh, I wish I could have thought of this, that it kind of challenges me. And I really love folk horror, and it got me thinking about folk horror, which also had me thinking a lot about fairy tales. I grew up during like the golden age of Disney movies. Like, I think the first movie I saw in theaters was Beauty and the Beast. And I loved fairy tales. I wanted to be a little princess. And so this book was a little bit of me challenging certain beliefs and fears I had since I was little, unraveling what I thought I needed to find happiness versus what I actually needed. And also, I was turning 30 at the time I started writing this book. And as a society and in fairy tales, it's kind of, you're young and beautiful and desirable, or you're an old hag. Like, there's just like a very interesting dichotomy there, where it's like, as a woman, you're kind of put in one, you're one or the other. And so as I start like moving into my 30s and getting older, I was thinking a lot about that. So I was thinking about folk horror and fairy tales and what it means to kind of value yourself versus looking for other people to value you and validate you.
Yeah.
And then also part of me having a little panic about getting older.
So I just loved spiders in your book. I was arachnophobic, but I would gladly share my space with any of the spiders in your book. Why spiders?
I don't know. I was trying to think about this. Sometimes I look back on things that I've written. I'm just like, and then I can peel back and connect and be like, oh, that's where this came from. But the spiders, I'm stumped. There are, so I was Spiderella. It was like one of those like plastic bag costumes for Halloween when I was younger. So there's pictures of me in this like witchy spider costume being very dramatic. It might have been that somewhere deep in my subconscious, but again, I write really, really early. And I think sometimes things just pop out of my head and I have no idea where they come from. But it worked out, because now I have such a love for spiders, and I don't know where it came from, but I love where it went. And when I was editing this book, I would sit in my chair, and if I saw like a spider on my windowsill, I'd be like, I'm doing something right. I'm doing something right. They came to hang out.
Yeah. You have Ralph the spider. Is it okay if I say his name?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's adorable. And it made me think a little bit of Luke. I don't know. Have you seen those videos of Lucas the spider? Somebody made these really adorable CGI cartoons of a very fluffy spider with giant eyes, and somehow made him adorable. And maybe Lucas is like a spiritual son to Ralph.
Yeah, I'm sure I had, like, if it's on the internet, it's somehow passed before my eyes. But I honestly don't know where Ralph came from, but he quickly became a fan favorite from like everybody who reads it. It's like, oh, Ralph. And a lot of people, you know, when the cover came out, would be like, oh, I don't know, I don't like spiders. And I'd be like, this book will change how you think about spiders.
So the book also changed a little bit about how you think about aging and how you think about relationships, or at least for myself. And I don't want to give too much away, but I thought it was just really, really well done. It valued friendship so much. And I think the archetype of the witch is just so powerful. Why do you think that witches are always having a moment?
It's strange, because I got lucky, because I didn't know that when I turned in this book, my publisher was like, yeah, witches are going to be big, like witches are, and I was like, oh, this is a happy accident. But I think, you know, as a society, we progress and challenge certain ideas. The witch and why witches fascinate me is why, like, what is so evil about a woman who's choosing to live alone by herself, who has powers? And I think it's really interesting, like, what, like, why do, did in history, why did we vilify women who just want to do their own thing? And I think that was something that, as I was writing the book, I really wanted to challenge my own beliefs and fears. And when I was younger, I thought, in order to be happy, I need to find, like, fall in love, and that's going to cure all of my problems, and I will be happy. And when I met my now husband, he didn't cure all of my, like, problems. Like, being in a good relationship doesn't magically change the rest of your life. It doesn't, you know, you still have growing to do, and you still have to figure out stuff on your own. And that was something that I was not prepared for and didn't understand, because I was like, this is true love. It's supposed to be magic, and one kiss will save everybody. And so that made, like, I needed to challenge that and figure out, like, outside, what examples do we have of women coming into their own and, like, having, like, a genuine happily ever after, that, like, you understand their choice, you're rooting for their choice, that doesn't involve romance, that doesn't involve somebody coming in. And, like, why are single women vilified?
So, or looked at as a pity party.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of friends who are single, and this, like, and I know that it comes from, I guess, a good place. So I have, like, friends who are single, and for whatever reason, you know, I mean, they wouldn't shun a relationship if the right one came around, or they're just happy the way that their life is. And it's like a pity party. Some people, they're like, oh, you know, like, isn't she seeing someone? Would you ever say that to, like, maybe people would talk about behind a guy's back, like, oh, they just haven't met the right woman yet. Yeah. But, like, it's not the same, you know, the way that people talk about single men as they talk about single women. Yeah. It's like, oh, he's the consummate bachelor. Look at him play the field until he turns, you know, 50, and now he has kids.
Right.
I know that's very specific, but I also know very specific situations like that. Or look at that poor single woman who's approaching middle age and will be unfulfilled forever because she doesn't have a partner and kids. And that's just so, it irritates me as somebody who doesn't fit into that category. And I can't imagine how it feels for them.
Yeah, there's this idea where it's like, well, nobody must want them. There's this idea that, you know, and when I was single and dating, and I didn't have any, like, prospects, which sounds old fashioned, I can't think of a better word. It felt like, well, nobody wants me. Or if I got broken up with, I'd be like, nobody wants me. I'm not worthy. And why I felt like I was kind of set up to fail. Like, I was trained to think that I needed somebody to want me to be worthy of love, or to be, you know, a person who had value in the world. Why don't we teach kids that they don't need to look outside themselves to
right,
for that kind of validation, that they can feel worthy and are worthy without having, you know, romantic love, or without, you know, outside, you know, attention in that way. And so that was definitely, it felt good to write this book, to write a story where it wasn't about, like, it feels to me that this is a fairy tale about finding true happiness.
And it's a real story of self-rescue. That's the other thing. There's so much, like, self-rescuing princess stuff out there, but, you know, like, and it's gotten better in Disney, I suppose, like the last 2-3, I don't know, I guess if you count Elsa, there's no love interest necessarily, but you know, you have Moana, you have Raya, or is it Raya? I always get that. The last one and the last dragon, although I'm convinced that she and the other princess have something going on. But you know, like Rapunzel, for instance, was a really good depiction of a young woman departing from the happily ever after that Disney really had, but she still got together with Flynn Rider in the end. And I don't necessarily think that that's what is needed for someone to be a self-rescuing princess. And what I like about this story is it plays with that theme and it shows that you don't need it.
Yeah. And like, also those movies are like, it's too late for me. Like, I'm a very bitter millennial. And I think I consider myself a millennial writer, which some people will cringe because millennials are whatever, not a very beloved generation for whatever reason. But like, I think a lot of people my age kind of have this idyllic childhood, or we were sold a certain message, and then the world got very dark very quickly for us. And I think I was definitely a product of my upbringing where I, you know, watched these movies and just like filed it deep into my subconscious, where I was like, oh, in order to be happy and to be worthwhile, I need like a man to love me and think that I am pretty. And like,
you know, remember when Ariel was like independent, people thought she was this independent rebel. And then you're just like, yeah, no, honey, you met him.
Daddy, I love him. Yeah, it's
5 seconds. And you're like completely changing your body and giving up your voice for like, what are you doing?
Yeah. And I mean, that's not to say like these movies are.
Oh, I love it. Movies, I'm not.
Yeah, saying, I don't want to like, come
as,
across
as a redhead.
Yeah.
and I certainly hope that the live action one, because I know there's a lot of people who are complaining that Ariel is not going to be a white redhead.
Yeah,
no problem. Let me tell you, as a redhead, it meant a million wonderful things to see a redhead be the Disney princess, and let that be the case for this new Ariel being, you know, a Black princess. But really, as much as I love that movie, as much as I love the music, when I grew up and experienced like actual relationships, I was like, oh no, she's not independent. She's 16. She's really very much 16.
I think it's just a lot of, I consumed a lot of media when I was younger. And I think most of the media in the 90s, when my tiny little brain was forming or whatever, just consumed a lot of media where I internalized messages that did not serve me as I went into adulthood and through my late teens and 20s. So I wanted to have a book that, you know, women my age or whoever could pick it up and be like, yes, I needed this, and be able to relate to it and have a story that, you know, has a horror can be heartwarming too.
Last question. The title, Cackle. I love it. And it comes up in some delightful ways in the book. Why did you choose it? Did you have another title in mind beforehand, or was it always Cackle?
So I'm terrible with titles, so I'm very proud of Cackle. The working title was Pet, just because that's what that's Sophie's pet name for Annie. There's already a book with that title, so we knew that we were going to need another one. And I like was bricking it because I'm very bad with titles. Like all of my documents are just like banana because I can't think of anything. But then I was like, I was writing one of the scenes and it came up and I just a light bulb went up over my head and I was like, ooh, yes. And so I have heard some people call it Crackle by accident, which I find hilarious, but
right.
I think it's good because it, I mean, it is a witch book, but it's not, it's a like contemporary witch book. It's not a, you know, a period book. It's not all about magic. It's really a story about a woman coming into her own and her mentor. And I wanted it to feel modern and fun, because the book is fun and funny and weird. And it's like, I wanted it, like, I had a very set intention to make it funny. And so I wanted, even though it's a horror book, I wanted people going in to know that it's got like a dark humor to it. And so to have the title be a version of laugh, I think that was a good hint. So what you can expect inside.
And also for horror people, and just in case people might need to know this, there are some definitely horrific moments in the book.
Yeah, the tone is a bit lighter than the return, but it's still horror. So, yeah.
But it's great. It's absolutely wonderful. So thank you so much, Rachel Harrison. I cannot wait to see what you have coming out next. I will read every one of your books.
There's more on that soon. So
yes. All right. This was Jessica with Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast. And our guest today was the amazing
Rachel Harrison.
And we are going to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.